Three, two, one. Welcome to another edition of the KMC podcast. My name's Tom Bump, the host, and looking forward to another fantastic episode here on the KMC. Today, we're going to be talking about some ideas of do environments and programming still attract people? And should we put as much time, energy, resources, talent into upgrading our environments or going to the extremes on programming to attract people? And so it's going to be an interesting podcast. I hope you'll enjoy it. My good friend John Tillman is going to be joining me today. John, welcome to the KMC podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Hey, it's awesome to be with you. We've had a lot of great conversations offline about this topic and a lot of others. And I've really appreciated getting to hang out with you and get my challenge, my thinking challenged. But John, there may be some folks that don't know you in our KMC community, even though you do post pretty regularly, put some amazing blog posts up. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I've been in ministry for about 20 years or so. Started out in creative arts drama ministry, and then transitioned from that into kids ministry at Fellowship Church, where I was working on the Elevate curriculum. So most of my job there involved that. I eventually was the head writer for small group and online content for Elevate. Myself and Sam Johnson, my writing partner, we co-led the writing department. We led a small team of writers who basically were responsible for everything having to do with Elevate that was written. We wrote every word about Elevate. And we started with the idea of what are we going to teach, and we finished it out all the way to layout and final editing and getting the artwork in there and then making the final PDFs and products that people downloaded. So we had our hands in it from the top to the bottom, as they say.
Man, and that is awesome. And I was a user of Elevate for a long time. I jumped on the bandwagon early on, brought it into my church. In fact, you started using year one and absolutely loved it. I will say our kids' ministry was improved by it. There was no doubt about it.
It's a fantastic product, and I loved working on it. And of course, today I'm working with Ministry Accelerator with Jason, and you're part of our community as well. And then I'm also working on a devotional site that I've been working with for a few years called The Park Forum, that is not geared toward kids; it's geared towards adults. But it provides devotionals Monday through Friday through email to a community of about 4,000 readers.
Wow! Awesome. Well, you posted a blog that got me thinking, and that's why we kind of reached out and said, hey, let's do a podcast about this, because I know a lot of people used to believe and still believe that spending a lot of time, money, resources on programming will attract people. You being in the inner circle with Elevate, I mean, you guys obviously had, and I got to see some videos of you guys, doing your live stuff as well as, as the product that you put out that I even used. Like I said, it did impact our children's ministry. We had people who their kids absolutely loved coming every Sunday because they loved, sometimes we attempted to do it live, which was hilarious.
That's great.
Probably butchered a lot of your scripts. all your hard work, man. Just kind of, it went great in rehearsal, and then when it got live, it was kind of like, I don't remember my next line. And we made it up. So we kind of rewrote your stuff live right there. But anyway.
Well, that's how it happens,
I would.
So I understand how that works.
Yeah. And that'd be another podcast to talk about how you guys did all that, because I think it'd be interesting, because there's a lot of people that do write their own stuff. But anyway, that's another podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to schedule that one.
Yes, we will. The whole idea, though, and you made a quote in this article, a blog on the Ministry Accelerator, which I love, that said, it was called Programming Won't Solve Attendance. And you said, I used to believe that if you made your kids' programming good enough, kids would beg their parents to come to church and your attendance would not only grow, but become more consistent. There's no current data to support this conclusion. There's individual stories that support it, but an antidote ain't data. And I got to say, that's true. I have a story that I can say, yeah, we saw some growth, but was it consistent growth? No, I be honest. No, it wasn't. It leveled off after a while. But anyway, I'm just curious if that's really true. Why are we in kids ministry still acting like it's true? That if we find the latest and greatest program, curriculum, whatever, that it's going to grow our ministry?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think many times it's because we believe the anecdotes rather than the data, or we don't even seek out or have the data at hand to compare and see, you know. And lots of times too, the stories about, you know, the parent who comes to you and tells you that that their kid loves coming to church and they make them get up every weekend and come, that parent is probably a parent who you have a close relationship with. And so that story matters to you and it's real important to you. And so, and it makes it seem more real, and it is real for that parent, but those are individuals. And a lot of times the people that told us those stories, because we had those anecdotes too at Fellowship Church, we had parents who told us that, but those parents who told us that, most of the time, they were the parents that were pretty much coming every week anyway. So the programming wasn't really solving a problem in their lives as much as it was, that was just a way that they were telling us how much they appreciated what we were doing. And that's nothing wrong with that. That's great. Mm-hmm. But the other side of that, why we still think it's true, it's just the same thing that happens to us in a lot of areas. We're just holding on to an old model, you know, an old model of whatever it is not bad. There's nothing wrong with it. Someone, you know, way back whenever in the day designed that model to solve a particular problem, to address a particular cultural need, to, you know, fit that time. That's why the model was designed. But the problem with models designed on culture is that culture never stops. It doesn't stand still. It keeps moving. We tend to, when we adapt to culture, we tend to be really creative the first time we adapt to culture. And we make a great adaptation. And then culture keeps changing. And you can watch churches do this. If you've been around long enough, you've seen this happen. A church is super creative and they adapt and change and they're doing new, wonderful things that haven't been done in the same way in a while. And then, you know, 10 years down the road, they adapt again and they change again, but they don't change that much. And then 15, 20 years down the road, they're pretty much done changing.
Right.
They've already done their adaptation and they're tired of it. So adaptation is that's why we're with that old model. It gets familiar, it gets comfortable, and we feel like it works, and our success stories tell us that it works. But the problem is not reaching just the success stories. The problem is reaching the people for whom it's not working. The problem is finding where it's going wrong so that we can make those adjustments.
Interesting. You know, I think that's a great idea. And well, you know, we often look at the church and it's, you know, you use the illustration of I grew up near the Great Lakes and watching the freighters come through the river into the lakes and watching them turn. And it can take a freighter well over a mile or more to make a full turn. You know, if they had to make a full U-turn, it could be a couple of miles for them to actually turn those ships around.
Yep.
And that sometimes that's the way the church is that we see the culture in that speedboat buzzing by and we go, oh, we've got to make this turn. And by the time we do get the turn, they're already 6 miles ahead of us. And,
Yeah, they've gone the other direction. Yeah,
they have. Or they might have even done another U-turn and they've gone back, you know, twice. And so I do think that sometimes we get stuck in that mindset that, well, this worked, let's stay with it. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've put ourselves in a rut. And then it's really hard to get out of. And so if we get locked into thinking, well, we just have to, you know, and sometimes people think, well, if I change programs to another program, that's going to help me. Right. You've seen that doesn't really truly work.
Yeah, I'd say it's one of those things that there are a lot of things you can do that can temporarily bump up your numbers, but that's not really that exciting.
Right. Yeah.
What's exciting is something that can be sustainable mm-hmm. in the life of a child to bring their faith to a level that is going to keep moving up through their life, mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, just peaking and then, you know, bottoming out.
Yeah. Okay. So if programming isn't really what attracts families, a lot of people think, oh, then it's got to be my environment. That if I can fix up my environment, and I've seen churches that have spent thousands, even millions of dollars on kids' areas. I mean, they're rivaling Disney in some places. I've seen other churches that they're still in the dark, cold, dreary basement, and they feel yeah. like you put up a few posters and put up, you know, maybe some paint, it'll do something.
Spray some Lysol over that musty smell.
Yes, yes, yeah. You know, lots of plugins in every socket and all that kind of stuff. You worked in a place, because I've seen Fellowship Church, the environment was amazing. I was always jealous every time I'd go, oh, if only, and I know some of our listeners are going to be saying, well, if I only had XYZ's church environment, my ministry would grow by leaps and bounds. Did you really see a jump when you guys did your environments? I mean, did you really see that? And was it sustainable from that?
No, environments were just a part of the same thing. Now, I do want to clarify just a little bit what I said, because it's not that environments or programming never worked ever or were a bad idea. Like, I'm not saying, oh, it was a bad idea to have some really good curriculum. That's not a good idea. You shouldn't do that. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
It's not that they never worked, but I think that our culture has moved on to a point at which that does not work any longer. And when it does work, it only works in the short term, and it's not a sustainable solution that's going to minister to people with the new attendance pattern that we're dealing with right now. I mean, we've talked before, I don't have the stats in front of me, but attendance is not only going down numerically, it's going down in consistency,
right?
You have people coming fewer and fewer weekends a month. And it didn't matter how great we made our environment. At Fellowship Church, we had some of the best environments out there in children's ministry. And we didn't spend near as much money as it looked like we did, because we spent a phenomenal amount of hours in staff time and in volunteer time building and designing, creating those environments. Uh-huh. So, you know, yeah, it definitely looked like we spent $1 million, but I guarantee you we didn't. But even with $1 million magical sparkling mountain with a waterfall and a train running through the tunnel and, you know, all the amazing things that we had the wonderful opportunity to build and create, they were wowing to the kids when they walked by the first week. The next week, it wasn't so much. It was just, here I am in this building, and there it is. And yeah, there's a mountain, but I need to go around over here because the bathroom's there. You know, it became less, it's not sustainable. I don't regret building those things. I don't regret having a great environment. It's a good investment, in a lot of ways, but it's not going to solve the problem of attendance. It's not a magical sparkling mountain, in your building or whatever you want to build is not going to solve your attendance problem.
Right. And this isn't a new problem. You know, you shared with me an article. Now I forgot the website that you shared that to me from.
From the Park Forum.
But anyway, yes, but the Park Forum. Yes, there we go. The one you write for. With a quote from C.S. Lewis that really struck me hard. I was just like, wow, okay. Even back in C.S. Lewis's day, he noticed there was this idea of trying, and he uses the word lure, but I don't necessarily know we're trying to lure people in by our environments or our programming. But anyway, here's the quote, and I want to get your thoughts about it. He said, "It looks as if they believed that people could be lured into going to church by incessant brightenings, lightenings, lengthenings, abridgments, simplification, and complications of the service. It's probably true that a new keen vicar will usually be able to form within his parish a minority of who are in favor of his innovations. The majority, I believe, never are. Those who remain, many giving up church going altogether, merely endure." I'd love to know what your thoughts were with that, and how does that reflect what you've been thinking about?
Oh yeah. Well, the first thing is that there's nothing new under the sun, right? I mean, we all, the same struggles that we feel like we're having today that are unique. I don't know that they're that unique. I'm sure that people in earlier times of church history struggled with the same things. And, you know, here Lewis is talking, obviously he's not talking about children's ministry or children's curriculum. He's talking about the very formal worship styles of the Anglican church of his day. So, you know, we're talking about the same, you know, according to what week of the year it is, we're going to read the same scripture. According to what, whatever the, you know, is in the Book of Common Prayer or the lectionaries that they were using, they're going to read those same things and go through the same types of motions pretty much every year on a cyclical basis. Mm-hmm. And so what he's talking about are little minor tweaks that were, that he's still being, I love that he's so cranky about it. He's so, you know, it's so irritating to him that there's this change and that why can't they just leave it alone? And we have those same kind of struggles today.
Yes.
Where you know, you have part of your group who like, well, why would we ever make that change? Why would we stop doing X? Why would we stop singing that song? Why would we change that? And then you have other groups who are like, they're ready to move on. You know, they're done. You know, we used to, there's another quote from that same devotional. It was yesterday's devotional on the parkforum.org. If you wanted to check it out. Or actually, no, it wasn't, because this won't be today, is it? This is anyway. It was last week on the Park Forum. This is another quote that I love. It says, "They don't go to church to be entertained. They go to use the service, or if you prefer, to enact it." And so, I think that's one of the things that we need to turn our focus to. You know, we've focused a lot on making a service that's entertaining to kids, but maybe not useful. We need to make services and curriculum that are useful to kids, that they can enact. You know, we used to always hear of people who were switching curricula, either they were switching to Elevate or they were switching away from Elevate or they were switching from whatever because their kids got bored. Mm-hmm. And there might be some truth to that because you and I know that there are people who, you know, they've got the free month downloaded from 252 Basics and they're using it every month over and over. You do what you got to do sometimes. We know that people would buy one series of Elevate and they would just use it over and over. So maybe doing that, I could understand your kids get bored with it. The truth is kids learn through patterns and repetition and schedule, and they get used to the pattern of whatever curriculum you're using. Elevate had a very definite pattern and our kids got used to it, and it helped them focus in when it was time to focus in and give big energy when it was time to give big energy, and that it wasn't the kids getting bored. You know, the customer tells you, well, my kids got bored. Nah, your volunteers got bored.
I was just going to say, is it more of a volunteer leader problem than it is a kid problem? Because you're right. I will say that I felt like it was getting predictable at times when I was using it. But as soon as you said that, it hit me that, well, that was me more than it was the kids. Because it really did, you know, you're right. If we really believe repetition is one of the best ways that they learn, we need to embrace that even more rather than shy away from it. But we tend to, I think that's probably a mistake leaders make today. And that's why they program jump, curriculum jump, rather than it really being something that, like you said, isn't meaning something to the kids, and it isn't something, you know, that's, you know, the goal is to elevate their faith, to take them deeper in discipleship. We can't do that if we're constantly flipping curriculums.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Which is, going back to the C.S. Lewis, is one of the things that he says in that thing is like, I can stand any kind of service just as long as it will sit still long enough for me to understand it and use it. Like, you know, as long as I can get used to it, then I can worship. And he wants, in his mind, as an adult, he was wanting that service to almost be by rote, by, you know, one of the analogies he uses is a good shoe is a shoe you don't notice. he wanted the service to be unnoticeable for us to notice God. That's kind of the idea of the patterns that we want to try to develop for kids too, is like, we want this pattern to be familiar so that they pay attention more to the content.
I was going to say, so that they can sit there and reflect on God more than anything else that we do. That's a powerful truth that I hope the listeners will marinate on for a while, that really ought to be our end goal with what we're doing. Large group, small group, doesn't matter, you know, whether you're still even doing the old Sunday school teacher lecture model. Whatever we do, our goal is always to be, to encounter God and to let the kids sit in his presence and worship and to go out having that encounter with him that changes them. Because, you know, we know that anybody who engaged Jesus left different. They never left the same. And if we come into God's presence that way, and we ought to be leading kids into that. And I think you kind of said it earlier, and I agree that I think sometimes we've put more focus on the entertainment, on the hype, rather than this whole idea of, hey, remember, we're here to come into God's presence. And what does that mean? To be sitting in God's presence for a while and learning from him so that we can go out into the world and not get trashed by it. We need to get our armor rebuffed and sharpened and the dings knocked out, and so we can go back out and stand again. That's,
well, you know, kids love tools, and they love things that can play with and manipulate, and not just physically, but like in their mind, things that they can use and feel like are useful to them, right? If you ever taught a kid a math trick that helps them with a particular type of problem, they love that. It's a tool that they use, and once they figure it out, it's entertaining to them, but they love it. So we need to focus less on not boring kids, and we need to focus more on giving them tools that are useful in our services that they can use.
Yeah. And so that kind of leads me into this next question then. So you're not, you know, obviously you're not saying, you know, don't make nice environments, don't make, you know, a good curriculum choice, but where should we spend more time focusing on, in your opinion, as you've been doing this?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't say, no, don't worry about your programming. It can be bad. It doesn't matter. That's not what I'm saying. It really does matter. But I would say that where we've fallen short and where we haven't used our programming as a tool to build community. Because people might come to your church because of an event or come to your church because of some flashy promotion, or they might come to your church simply because someone invites them. What the reason that they will stay is connected to whether they are able to find some measure of community that that can help them in their faith.
Right.
And a lot of people, that's not original to me. A lot of people are saying that. We need to build community. We need to build community. And so that's what we need to look at with our programming, and making our programming good is a necessity.
Right.
But the programming is just a tool to give you the opportunity to build community. You know, your job is building community, and that's the real return on investment that you're looking for. And as a children's minister, you have a unique challenge where you're trying to build community among your volunteers, among your parents, and among the kids. And there's not very many places in the church that have that many touch points of that many different groups with different needs that you all have to, you have to build community in all three of those.
Right.
It's one of the reasons kidmin is one of the hardest jobs in the church. And so, you know, that's where I think it is finding a way to build community.
Yeah. Which kind of takes me into this next curve, because as we look at building community, I know the discussion in a lot of Facebook groups and forums and conferences is talking about how do we build a community when the frequency of attendance in church is going down. There was an article published on churchleaders.com saying that 40% of Americans see themselves as regular church attenders. But we know that if that was really true, or if they were actually in attendance at church, we would probably see a lot greater attendance. Now, kids ministry, because of the tracking and things like that, we're able to get a better grasp of our numbers and how frequently. And I would love to actually see and I may do this on our KMC Facebook group. I would love to take an informal poll to have people track for a month or two and see where their frequency numbers really are. But I think it's safe to say from what the studies that I've seen that we do know that regular attendance is about 2 times a month. I think Barna did some study in there, and I'll have to research it again, but I'm pretty sure that that's where we've been sitting on that number for a while now of 2 times a month is the average attendance. So looking at that, then what have we learned from studying this kind of stuff, and how do we build community? What are some of the things that you're thinking about could be some of the answers maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. It's difficult. In a response, someone had questioned me on the blog post about programming. Someone questioned me about that and about needing to build community. And I said, yeah, it's difficult because churches feel like, you know, that old analogy of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make the horse drink, right? Mm-hmm. Well, church leaders right now are like, okay, not only can I not get the horse to drink once he comes to the water, I can't even get the horse to the water. Like, we're right. Like, I got a church full of community here if you would just be here regularly, but we can't even lead the horse to water anymore, right? Yeah. He's not coming. That's a real pain point, you know, and probably some people, when we say, well, it's all about building community, and they're like, yeah, right. How am I supposed to do that?
Yeah. If I only saw the kids regularly, I could.
If I had them regularly, I could, right? And
yeah.
In some ways, that's right. That's true. But we got to look at ways that families are getting community now, the way they're getting it online, the way they're interacting with community groups online, the way they're interacting with their parent-teacher organizations online, the way they're interacting with their sports clubs online. We got to start looking at that and realizing that to be a part of their community, it's going to have to be a two-way street of moving. I don't know. I told my own church pastor recently. I was one of the pastors at my own church recently. I was talking about this attendance thing, and I told him, I said, I don't think you should stop trying to convince people to come to church every week. Of course, you should try to convince them to come back and come right. every week.
Right.
But right now, culture's not moving that direction. You're fighting against a gravitational force that we don't understand. We don't know exactly. Right now, you're just going to have to make do in some ways. And you're going to have to find a way to make community where they are and interact with them as a church community where they are, which is online. There's not, you know, there's a few solutions out there that people are testing and trying. And that's one of the reasons that with Ministry Accelerator, why, you know, I don't feel like I'm so smart that I know how, or that Jason's so smart that he knows how, but I feel like if we get enough voices into our community of leaders, if we work together, we can find ways to adjust and find ways to seek out those opportunities.
Right.
That's what we got to do. We got to look broader. You know, I didn't study enough outside of my area when I was working on Elevate. I didn't study enough educational trends. I didn't study enough, you know, about reading programs in schools or about social science experiments of how people were building community. I needed all that. I just didn't make the time or have the time.
Right.
And so that's one of the things we need to do.
Yeah, I agree. And if you're listening to this podcast, I want to encourage you to join the Ministry Accelerator community. And we'll tell you how to do that at the end of the podcast. But because I think this is something that, you know, I know, yeah, you, Jason and I, we've talked about this and we've started trying to come up with some solutions and start exploring something. Because as I sat there and I listened to you, I was like, gosh, you know, adults are doing really well at connecting and building community because, you know, adults will attend small groups, life groups, whatever you want to call them in your church, and they basically bring their kids and let them play around while they're meeting or whatever. They'll have some kind of childcare going, but usually nothing super meaningful or focused or anything. You have all these other groups, you know, like you said, PTAs and all that. Adults are doing well at getting connected, but the question that I wonder if people are really stopping and asking, I know we're asking it because we've been talking about this, what about the kids? How do we help the kids build community? How do we give them another a place to go when they're not at church or they're not in school, that they can find a safe community that helps them grow spiritually? And I know that's a question that I know you and I are concerned about, and Jason, I mean, and a number of others on the Accelerator community. And this is a question that I don't hear a lot of people talking about. I don't see the discussion on the Facebook groups. I see a lot of discussion about curriculum, about environment, about events, big events. I don't see a lot of discussion about, hey, I'm concerned that our kids are not getting community. I think a lot of people have fooled themselves into thinking the 30 minutes at most, you know, because if you think about the average Sunday morning, you know, we do
hour long service.
Yeah. You're doing half an hour large group in worship. Yeah. You're doing a half hour, 45 minutes. If that, I mean, if you break it down really by the time you have travel time from large group room to small group rooms to settling them down to getting them to focus. And then next thing you know, the parents are there. Mm-hmm. you really aren't getting, but maybe what, 15 minutes, maybe if we're generous.
Yeah.
that the kids are building community life in. And unless your small group leaders are doing stuff outside the four walls, which we all dream they would do, you know, that would be fantastic. But I don't know of a lot of small group leaders. And if you are doing it, I'd love to hear from you. I know we'd all like to hear from you.
Me too. Yeah.
Because I'd like to know what you're doing and how you're doing it. But I think, you know, I know I feel like I'm rambling, but I'm trying to bring this back to the point of we're not doing a good job of saying, how do we help these kids find community? How do we help them connect even with other kids that are going through the same things they're going through? How do we connect them with spiritually more mature believers that can help them and walk with them in their journey? And I think that you're right. I think that's the question we got to start asking, because if we're doing all this for grownups, why aren't we doing it for kids?
Right. Exactly. You know, in the old days of Sunday school, old school Sunday school programs that, you know, probably you and I grew up in, you know, right next to the church, you had the church building. And then right next to that church was a building that was probably almost the same size, maybe even bigger. That was the educational building. Remember those?
Yep.
And a massive educational space with a bunch of classrooms, and your discipleship and your community happened in that building. And so you had this, this tangible physical edifice that literally showed your community, this is our commitment to discipleship. This is our commitment to education. And when Sunday school was happening, it was happening maybe not equally well. there were Sunday school lessons that I really look back at and doubt now, but it was happening for all ages at the same time. You know, I was in a Sunday school class, my little brother and sister were in their Sunday school class, and my dad and my mom were in their Sunday school class, and then we were in worship together. Churches don't have that time now, right. Because not only are the average people only coming twice a month, they're only coming for 1 hour instead of, you know, when I was growing up, I would be in church 5 hours a week.
Yeah. Yep.
Me too. And there's variances. There's probably some people in some more traditional, systems or in smaller, you know, smaller churches or smaller towns where some of those traditions are still hanging on, and you might still have your kids for, you know, 3 hours a week, maybe. Maybe you have a Wednesday night or something else. Mm-hmm. But still, that time is reducing.
Right.
And so the church today has to do something to replace that edifice of a building that we don't, that most modern churches don't build that building anymore.
Right.
Don't build that physical building anymore that had a classroom for every person in the church. All those systems are online, but they're not online equally for children.
Right.
You don't have a small group meeting for children in people's homes, or if you do, nobody's heard of it. I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
That's where the problem is where is the small group? Where's the Sunday school? Where is the community and teaching in a small group setting, not during worship, for kids? Yeah. And the answer is it's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess to kind of try to bring this to a positive conclusion of giving some people some ideas, because, you know, if they listen to this, they go, wow, this sounds, but you know what? I mean, cause I will say, you know, if you want to go back to the old school, as I'm listening to you, I was sitting there reflecting, and I got this picture of my fourth grade boys' Sunday school teacher, Mr. M. And I remember, I mean, we didn't have large group time, unless you want to call the first maybe 5 minutes as everybody came in. We might have done sword drills, or we might have sung one song or something like that, you know.
Had a donut.
Yeah. But otherwise, we were in class with Mr. M the whole time. And he was responsible for the entire hour or however long the pastor went. We had Sunday school hour and then we had worship hour. Those were our 2 hours. And when we got to a bigger church, we did Sunday school in the middle, and, you know, did early service Sunday school. And that way adults and kids were all doing the same things at the same, but I remember, I mean, I don't remember all the lessons he taught us, but I remember how much he cared about us kids. I remember how we were like a gang. I mean, we hung out together. We did life. I mean, we had parties. The biggest deal was that every year Mr. M would have us, all the guys, come out to his farm, and we would have this big camp out in his woods, and he had all these crazy games planned for us, and we had a big bonfire, and we did life together that way. And those were some of the deepest times that I really sensed. I know that I grew spiritually and was challenged to think about my own faith as a fourth grade boy. So when you think about stuff like that, and when you start thinking about what are some of the other things that kids ministry leaders could be focused on to start getting a better return on investment of time, talent, resources?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, get yourself a curriculum that you feel comfortable producing it at your level, whatever that is. You know, if you have, you know, big screens and lights and big sound system, maybe Elevate or Orange or some curriculum that's has a lot of media, would be great for you. And get that curriculum in place, but then get your volunteers and train them in a way that they understand that they're, and I'm not talking about your main stage volunteers, like your people who are acting out the skits or telling the Bible stories.
Right.
That's a part of what I would call programming, the production.
Right.
But your volunteers that are dealing directly with the kids, get them the concept in their head that their job is building relationships.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only reason they're there.
Right.
They're there to build the relationships, to get to know the parents, to get to know the kids, to you know, contact those kids when they're not there the next week. To, you know, that is their job. That's, you know, if I was in the spot doing it, that's what I would be trying to implement, is lessen the burden on your volunteers of performing, of saying all the right words, memorizing a small group activity, let them read it off the sheet, you know, memorizing stuff, let them figure out another way to do it, and, and let them carry the burden instead of building relationships. You know, that's one of the things that we're trying to build. We're creating a curriculum called Life Curriculum now, with Ministry Accelerator. And our sort of idea for it is require as little as possible of the volunteers, because you don't want them, their job is building community. Their job is praying with the kids. Their job is helping make that happen.
Yeah.
And their job is
into deeper discipleship.
Yeah. Deeper discipleship, deeper relationship. That's kind of where we wanted it to land for them. We don't want them to have to spend hours in preparation. We don't want them to have to spend tons of time prepping the lesson. They just show up and there's the sheet and they can do it with that only. And that way they don't, they're not stressing out about the performance, but instead they can be investing in the moments that they have with the kids.
Right. Right. Good stuff. So, well, John, I know this is, you know, like I said, we're just scratching the surface, and we definitely, you know, I guess we're going to have to bring Jason Tilly on board with us here and do a round table here. And we have talked about doing a round table discussion, probably with bringing in some other leaders and doing some live brainstorming. And so at some point I'd love to do that for the KMC group. I think it'd be a fun thing to pull off. But if somebody wants to get more in touch with you, dialogue with you, join the Accelerator community, tell us how they can do that.
Sure. The best way to get in touch with us for the Accelerator is just, our email is info@ministryaccelerator.org. You know, if they email us there, or they can contact us through, you know, through Twitter or Facebook. On Twitter, we are MIN Accelerator on Twitter. And you can find us there and interact with us there. And then, of course, there's links there to everything else, every other way to contact us.
Yeah.
You know, I'm JTillHuman on Twitter is me. JTillHuman on Twitter and on Instagram. Those are my primary ways that you can follow me. And of course, the Park Forum is on Twitter as well. You can follow that as well.
Excellent. And we have we're still participating in Slack. The accelerator community is on there. So you can request to join the Slack group. And because Slack, if you haven't used it, is a great app that, you know, you can follow discussions, you can message, you can add documents. It's a really cool thing. And we'd love to see some more activity over there. As well as if you're in the KMC Facebook group. If you're not, you can join. But if you are, you'll see posts by John and Jason both pretty regularly on our Follow Fridays and on the weekends. They post some things. A lot of times I share some things from there that are intriguing my mind. And so by all means, come interact with us there. So, hey, man, thanks for being on the KMC podcast. And we're definitely going to get you back on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.